Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, Patrick Cherneski of Agriculture Canada reveals whether farmland in Western Canada has recovered from the drought of 2017.
Abnormally dry and drought conditions have persisted.
We'll also talk to Cam Dahl of Cereals Canada about glyphosate and why growers may need to stop using the herbicide prior to harvest.
They should stop using it as a dry down? Is that what you're telling producers?
And Bruce Burnett, our Director of Weather and Markets Information, deciphers the grain and oilseed markets. That's all on Between the Rows, with this week's host, Robert Arneson.
Hi, I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer, and welcome to Between the Rows. First up, 2017 was one of the driest summers on record for parts of Western Canada. For example, Regina recorded 1.8 millimeters of rain for the entire month of July, the second lowest amount ever recorded. The drought continued into the fall, and many predicted that it would persist into the summer of 2018. Joining us to talk about the current soil conditions on the prairies and the forecast for the rest of the summer is Patrick Cherneski, Manager of the National Agro-Climate Information Service for Agriculture Canada. Patrick joins us from Regina. Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
So first off, can you kind of remind us of the situation last summer in Western Canada and particularly in Saskatchewan? What did things look like?
Sure. Last year we had a significant drought that took hold in the prairie region, really centered on southern Saskatchewan. That drought actually extended south into the northern Great Plains of the United States, and it was a significant drought. The U.S. is actually leading, doing an analysis, a report on that drought, and Canada's contributing to it. So in, let's say, southern Saskatchewan, we're really the most intense drought conditions existed. We had really most of the southern part of the province, southern Saskatchewan, in moderate or severe drought conditions, with severe closest to the U.S. border. And in Manitoba, quite a bit of abnormally dry condition with near the U.S. border, again, some moderate drought conditions.
So a lot of the talk going into this 2018 growing season was that the drought might persist into the summer, and that that would really have an adverse effect on crops, obviously, and hay and pasture. So what is the situation on the prairies as of, say, July 1st?
Yep. Well, certainly abnormally dry and drought conditions have persisted. Recent rains over the last couple of weeks have improved the situation since May, but if we were to look at the May map, May drought conditions map that we produce, there really is a large extent of abnormally dry and drought conditions in Alberta, more northern Alberta, sort of around Edmonton or the southeast corner of the province, still in southern Saskatchewan, and most of Manitoba covered by abnormally dry or drought conditions. So that said, the recent rains have certainly helped with conditions, and since May, certainly there has been some improvement in the conditions.
So I guess the story of last year was that, you know, the subsurface moisture in the soil kind of really carried the crop through, but that was, you know, drawn down severely throughout 2017. Has that subsurface soil been recharged with water?
No, not really, unfortunately. We look back to last year, we certainly did have a significant precip in the winter and early spring, and that certainly helped carry through the year. That's been drawn down, and as we started this spring, the conditions were again very dry, and coming off a very dry back end of the summer of 2017. Record dry, as you mentioned in the start, in southern Saskatchewan and southern Alberta. So we started this year with really very low moisture reserves, and there just hasn't been sufficient rain to recharge. If we were to look at one of our other maps, you know, percent of average precipitation or the difference from average, they both tell a similar story. But you know, you have large areas of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba that are, you know, 60 to 85% of average, and even the next lower category, you know, 40 to 60% of average. That's still a significant area in southeastern Alberta, southwestern Saskatchewan, the interlake of Manitoba, and south central Manitoba.
So, if you just kind of describe different areas, what would be sort of the epicenter area with where you'd have kind of the most concern about lack of soil moisture and subsurface soil moisture?
Yeah, I think right now, taking everything in total, probably the two biggest areas of concern would be southwestern Saskatchewan, kind of the Swift Current area. Now, this was one of the hardest hit areas from the 2017 drought. Really, it experienced its driest summer in more than 100 years. Although winter precip was near normal, the spring and summer precipitation has been extremely low. Currently, water supplies are very low. Soil moisture is well below average. On the website, we have weekly satellite soil moisture monitoring maps, which anyone can access and have a look at. And really, right now, it's showing very dry. The other region with very significant deficits, moisture deficits, would be the Interlake region in Manitoba. Mm-hmm. Again, very significant deficits, really in the range of 2 to 4 inches, or you know, 50 to 100 millimeters. There are some areas under severe drought conditions, and up until recently, it's been a lot of warm temperatures and there's lack of rainfall for weeks that have led right. to, you know, poor soil moisture and stream flow and even, well, poor crop germination as well.
So when we talk about drought, a lot of the focus is always on, of course, annual crops like canola and wheat. What about hay crops and pasture? Are they in okay shape from what your data shows?
No. All growing things kind of are affected by drought, and so yeah, the pasture and hay crops have been similarly impacted as you know, annual crops, cereal crops, oil seeds. Everything's a bit different, but certainly in the dry and drought areas, pastures have gotten off to a poor start. Growth has been reduced, and you know, along with drought, typically you are getting heat, and so you know, for the hot periods, that has an impact on livestock as well. So they don't like the heat any more than the rest of us. So once it gets really hot, you know, there certainly is a need for, you know, more watering, and you know, there's some stress to the animals.
All right. Well, last question here, Patrick. So what's the expectation for the remainder of the growing season? What's the forecast look like?
Yeah. So Ag Canada, we don't do a forecast per se, but we certainly work with Environment Canada and get their forecast and their information. So then we do some interpretation. So looking at the Environment Canada products, they put out a variety of forecasts, you know, from the ones most everyone sees, the daily, you know, maybe the week ahead, but you know, there are also multiple weeks and then up into monthly and even into three monthly, which are referred to as seasonal. So the going long term, the seasonal 3 months ahead, so July, August, September, it's really not very encouraging. We're really looking for above normal temperatures, or expecting above normal temperatures, really across most of the southern part of Canada, and certainly the prairie region, and with a fairly high probability. It's not a certainty, but forecasts are always a probability. And for really all of the Southern Prairie region, it is looking like about a 60% probability of above normal temperatures. Plus, on the precip side, for Southern Alberta and Saskatchewan, it's looking like about a 50% probability of below normal precipitation, pretty much centered on that traditional Palliser Triangle right. area of southeastern Alberta and southwestern Saskatchewan, which is one of the driest areas right now. So you take those two in total, above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation, and again, not encouraging. Forecasts are not a certainty, and they can change and have some variability, but that's what the forecasts are currently.
All right. Well, thanks, Patrick. Hopefully the forecasters are wrong in this case, but I've been speaking with Patrick Chernesky, who helps manage the Drought Watch Service for Agriculture Canada. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, Robert.
This is Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer. Later on in the show, we'll take a look at the latest news from the commodity markets. But up next, we're going to talk about glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup and one of the most controversial chemicals in the world at the moment. In 2017, Europe came close to banning the weed killer because of a disputed World Health Organization report linking the chemical to cancer. Canadian farmers use glyphosate to kill weeds, but they also use it to dry down the crop prior to harvest, especially for crops like wheat and oats. Here to talk about that practice is Cam Dahl, president of Cereals Canada, a group that represents farmers and companies in Canada's grain trade. Cam joins us from Winnipeg. Hi, Cam.
Hi, Robert.
So I guess just first off, what is Cereals Canada's message to growers when it comes to spraying glyphosate prior to harvest?
I think, Robert, the key message, and this applies to so many things, is what happens on the farm and the decisions that farmers make today really does have an impact on the market and our ability to market products around the world. And our ability to continue to access some of those premium high-valued markets. So that really is a key issue or a key message on many, many things. And that applies to pesticide use. That applies to which products that farmers choose to use. And it does apply to the fall application of glyphosate.
There was a recent article about glyphosate and using it pre-harvest in the Alberta Farmer Express. And I'm going to read a quote to you because you were quoted in this article, and I'd like you to respond to the quote. So the quote says, "Glyphosate is not registered as a desiccant, and it is not meant to be used to dry down crops. If farmers are using it to dry down, then farmers should be changing their practices." So can you just respond to that? So your message here is that they should stop using it as a dry down? Is that what you're telling producers?
Well, the key message is to follow the label on how glyphosate is to be used in fall application. And when I refer to desiccation, that would be application of the product when the plant is still green, when the wheat plant or oat plant or whatever the crop is still green and immature. And the label for glyphosate is that it should only be applied after the seeds have reached 30% moisture or less. And this really is not an arbitrary number. It is at this point that the seeds are mature and are no longer putting down proteins and starches into the seeds. So then there's no longer that possibility of uptake from the plant to be put into the seed. So that is the guideline that should be followed is that all of the field is below 30% moisture or 30% moisture or less. And that is the guideline that will help ensure that Canada's exports and domestic shipments continue to be very much well below the maximum residue limits for glyphosate.
Right. So that message has been out there for a while, but I guess besides the technical side of it and the actual agronomy of it, there's also the consumer perception part. So there is sort of this growing sense that perhaps, you know, customers, whether they be in Italy or malt barley buyers or whoever, are kind of, you know, telling growers to stop doing this practice of spraying glyphosate pre-harvest.
Well, and that gets back to you asked in the beginning, you know, what is the key message for farmers? And it isn't just around glyphosate, but it's around all of practices relating to farm inputs, is that we really do have to have that understanding of what happens on the farm matters in the marketplace. And that customers are paying more and more attention to, you know, whether they're missing MRLs in some markets or, you know, MRLs that are different in other markets than what Canada has, or, you know, some of the increased scrutiny around the world on glyphosate. You know, we can now test to things like parts per billion and parts per trillion, and if folks want to know how small that is, a part per trillion is 1 second in 32,000 years. It's a really, really small number, but it's not zero. And those are the levels that that we're able to test to now. And so when there are concerns about some of the, you know, whether it's missing maximum residue limits or other market concerns, the ability to test is at these minute levels is there, we're, you know, really seeing a growing scrutiny around the world around some of these pesticide residue levels and other issues like DON or deoxynivalenol other mycotoxins that grow in grain.
Okay, so when I've spoken to growers about this issue, you know, they often come back to me with a comment like, well, glyphosate is registered for use in Canada as a pre-harvest aid, therefore I'm going to use it. What do you think about that perception or that point of view?
And that's a perfectly legitimate point of view, provided it's used according to the label. Glyphosate is a very effective pre-harvest weed control. You know, for things that have you know, deep roots like Canada thistle, that fall control of those weeds is the most effective time to limit the growth of these plants. And if you're in a zero till or conservation tillage environment, which has many environmental benefits, then a fall application of glyphosate is a very effective means of controlling these weeds. So my response is yes, that is something that is an effective tool in farmers' toolbox. But we need to know, be cognizant of what the guidelines are in the application. And again, that gets back to that 30% moisture, and we need to be following those guidelines.
It's been one of the big stories of this year is with the situation in Italy and customers there no longer buying or buying a lot less Canadian durum, partly because of this concern about glyphosate residues on Canadian durum. You talk a lot to international buyers and people around the world. What is this practice of spraying glyphosate pre-harvest doing to Canada's global reputation as a source of wheat and other cereal crops?
Well, just a quick comment on the Italian situation. That really isn't a glyphosate question. I know glyphosate does come up in the conversation, but it really is about protectionism. And if the activists in Italy that are focused on limiting Canadian imports hadn't latched on to glyphosate, they would have latched on to something else. So that issue really fundamentally is not about glyphosate, but it's about protectionism. But that being said, you know, I get back to some of my previous comments that Customers around the world are paying more and more attention to some of these residue issues. Other issues like DON or ochratoxin A, some of these mycotoxins that that grow on grain, that it really does apply to customers around the world in every market. So they're paying attention to Canadian farming practices. We have a very good reputation in terms of quality. We have a very good reputation in terms of environmental sustainability. Those are good selling points for Canada. They're part of our reputation, and we need to keep that. And it's a competitive advantage going forward. Again, we rely on farmers collectively knowing what the label requirements are and following them.
So, last one for you, Cam. So, sometimes it can be sort of a difficult message for farmers to swallow that, you know, markets and consumer perception at the end of the day kind of, you know, trump science or, you know, determine how you grow your crops. Is that part of the message you're trying to deliver here? Is that, you know, you have to be aware that consumer preferences really, at the end of the day, kind of determine what you do on the farm?
What the customer is demanding is, of course, vitally important in everything we do. But the, you know, the message that we're delivering through the Keep It Clean program, and I invite people to visit keepingitclean.ca if they want more information on some of these messages. That message is really science-based, and it's based on the research that went into drafting glyphosate's label and all the requirements that are on there. And it's I know sometimes this can be daunting. I think the last time I looked at the label for glyphosate, it was 109 pages long. So there's a lot of information there that farmers need to know. But this message is really science-based, and it's based on what we know about how glyphosate residues occur and the measures that farmers need to take to limit that in Canadian cereal crops.
All right. Well, thanks, Cam. I've been speaking with Cam Dahl, President of Cereals Canada, about spraying glyphosate on cereal crops prior to harvest. Thanks for coming on the show, Cam.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
This is Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer. Up next on the show, in 2017, Canadian farmers seeded more canola than wheat, the first time that's ever happened. But this spring, wheat regained its crown, beating canola by about 2 million acres. Stats Can, in a June 29 report, pegged wheat acres at 24.7 million compared to 22.7 million for canola. Here to talk about the Stats Can report and other news from the commodity markets is Bruce Burnett, Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Farm Media. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
So I guess first off, what's the main news from the Stats Can report?
Well, the Stats Can report, as you pointed out, we did see higher wheat acreage, although the report in March essentially told us this was likely to be the case. But what happened in this report, there was a significant change from the March numbers. So the canola area increased by 1.3 million acres from that report, bringing it at just behind or below the record area for canola. So that certainly is a significant shift. Most of the trade had been expecting it, so I don't expect it to influence prices as much as you would think. But that was the major change there. There was also a major change in wheat that people are largely ignoring. From the March estimates, we dropped almost a million acres of spring wheat area. And part of that area obviously went into canola, but also part of that area went into durum wheat. So we saw a big increase in the durum wheat acreage as well. And I think in terms of market influences, especially on a market like durum, this additional acreage is probably some of the bigger news that we saw. The rest of the commodities were not changed that much from March. We saw a slight increase in the barley area, which you would have expected because barley prices have been pretty strong. But the things like lentils and peas dropped off slightly more than what was indicated in the March report. But again, it's a few hundred thousand acres here and there. The major changes were in wheat, durum, and canola.
So what do you think, if anything, that additional canola acreage means? Is it a significant development, or is it, could it have effect on prices long term? Or
well, I think it'll have an impact on prices, but I don't think that's going to come right away. We're in this environment where the futures trading is largely about the trade wars and the impacts of those things. And canola has held up relatively well compared to other commodities in this environment where we've seen soybean prices drop dramatically, wheat prices drop dramatically, corn prices drop dramatically. So I don't think there's going to be an initial impact here. Obviously, if we continue to have reasonable growing conditions, especially in the canola growing areas, this will play out to larger production and there will be some concerns there. But again, that does play into the positive part of these trade issues because the trade, I think, feels that we'll get stronger canola exports, especially to China, in case there is a full-blown trade war come out in the next week or so.
Yeah, we'll get back to the trade issues a little bit later, but first we should talk about the USDA because they also issued an acreage report on June 29th. Can you share some of the highlights from that report?
Again, the corn and soybean acres were larger, as a little bit larger than people expected. For the first time, we've seen a larger soybean acreage than canola acreage or than corn acreage in the U.S. So that's certainly a very substantial change, but an indication, I guess, of what the price picture was prior to these trade wars starting or the futures responding to the potential for a trade war. So we are seeing that impact. Again, it's also farmers, I think, in the U.S. taking some of the risk off the table. Corn is a very costly crop to plant. And I think that those two factors resulted in this. The wheat areas weren't really that much of a concern. We did see a spring wheat acreage increase in North Dakota and Montana and Minnesota. Really, when you look at the drop in Canadian acreage, the market really, I don't think, is going to be too concerned about it. So certainly we're seeing some things there. On the winter wheat side, we did see a drop in the harvested area for hard red winter wheat. That was positive for the markets. And again, I would think there's probably a potential for that acreage to even be lower here as we move through into September.
Okay, so getting to the trade issue. So as you know, on July 1st, Canada formally imposed tariffs on a long list of U.S. goods. What's your sort of expectation for where this is going, this trade battle in North America and, of course, the U.S.-China trade battle? What's your sense of how this is going to play out over the next few weeks?
Well, certainly, I think if you take a look at it, just compartmentalize Canada in this picture, it looks as if NAFTA talks are on ice here probably until 2019 or really late in 2018 because the president said this weekend that they weren't going to start up until after the midterm elections in the U.S. So I don't think there's going to be any big movements here. There could be some response from the U.S. and I would expect Canadian would position would be to respond to that, this tit-for-tat thing. In terms of ag commodities, though, because our trade is so balanced in agricultural commodities, I don't expect it to have a huge impact on both sides of the border. First of all, the U.S. hasn't instituted any tariffs on Canadian, as well as, again, for Canada putting on tariffs, we're trying, or it looks as if the government's trying to pick areas where we have alternate suppliers or produce enough at home. So a beef tariff, we produce beef at home, so that's just going to change a bit of the trade flows that we see there. So I don't think that's as much of an issue as this Chinese and Mexican trade issues that will be coming up here. So I think that's something to watch. On July the 6th, the U.S. is going to impose tariffs, and Chinese will likely respond again with tariffs on things like soybeans and pork. There's already some tariffs on pork from China because of the initial steel and aluminum. So this trade war could escalate as we go through the summertime.
Okay, so continued trade chaos sounds like the message is here. So, okay, so last one. So despite all the trade issues, the U.S. dollar is extremely strong right now, and of course, crude oil prices have been rising. What does this all mean for agricultural commodities and markets?
Well, certainly there's a couple of things going on here. The strong U.S. dollar is in response to their higher interest rates, and they do have a strong economy right now. But also, because of these trade wars, it's weakening everybody else's currencies. So that's one of the reasons for this U.S. dollar strength. And that's impacted Canada. If you take a look at the fundamentals of the Canadian economy, we have seen a sharp drop in the loonie. And that, again, is positive for agricultural trade, for farmers in general. And that's one of the reasons that canola has responded quite well here over the past month to these trade issues. The other thing is the crude oil. The crude oil usually has an impact on the Canadian dollar by strengthening it. We're at 2.5-year highs or 3-year highs now for in the oil markets, and that hasn't been able to buoy up the dollar at all. So it's something to watch for in the coming months, especially since this could turn around rather quickly. The obvious impact of higher crude oil prices, though, is on input costs for farmers, and that's negative news no matter which way you slice it.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce. I've been speaking with Bruce Burnett, Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Farm Media. That's it for today's show, the first one of July. This is Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer. Thanks for listening.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca. And sign up today.